Welcome to the Becoming a Streamer podcast by Pipeline, where we sit down with your favorite streamers and interview them to learn more about their journey and how they got to where they are at today. I'm your host, co-founder of Pipeline, StoneMountain64, and today we are joined by Monster D-Face, full-time streamer, content creator, and caster commentator. This man is incredible. The journey that he's been on and where he continues to go down. He actually casted at the Fortnite World Cup, that $30 million competition. His face was up on the screen for it. He's also a Twitch partner with over 200,000 followers there. YouTube with over 100,000, where he's focused mostly on Fortnite content right now, but he's gone through many games over his journey and is doing so much more now with his podcast and another company that he's working on. You can find him on all socials at Monster D-Face. For example, that's twitch.tv/MonsterDface, the letter D, F-A-C-E. If you love this podcast, this is a fantastic one to share alongside all the other episodes that we do here. But without further ado, enjoy. Perfect. Monster, dude, thank you so much for joining in on the podcast today. I'm really excited to have you on.
Hey, man, when it comes down to gaming and just talking and podcasts in general, I love doing this kind of stuff. Thank you for thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Listen, before we get too deep into everything, because I know you have a long history with all this stuff, I want to kind of get an understanding of even before you got into doing content, where you were at with, life in general.
Yeah, my pre-life elevator pitch. I gotcha. Yeah. Where do I begin? So it kind of originates with the name D-Face. I used to do graffiti as a defacer, as a graffiti artist. So I'm from New York City. Before all this, I was going to school for criminal justice. I know, go figure, the irony of someone who was, really into the street art. And then I got into the law and that kind of stuff. But it was Battlefield 3. I was really good at it and on console, and I was addicted. That led me to competitive. And then I took my first financial aid check in college and I bought a gaming computer.
Wow. So was that after you were in college? Is that what you said?
Yeah, my first year in college, I had a FAFSA check, and some people might be able to relate to this, but basically the government gave me money for books and like equipment to prepare for college. And I was like, yeah, I'm definitely going to use that money on the books. All right. And I bought like a high-end Asus laptop.
Oh my gosh, that is incredible. And so is that what kind of got you into, were you already gaming? Like, was that something you were already into, even like watching content in the first place? And that's what you were interested in? Or was it more of so like...
So it, like, interesting enough, I was really into YouTube at the time. It was like the only platform, right? Outside of Twitch for live streaming. I was trying to get featured in a Machinima Top 10 Weekly for Battlefield 3 because I was highly addicted to Battlefield 3. And just looking at the clips that they were posting, I'm like, dude, I shoot down choppers all the time with my tank and I do all this cool stuff. So I'm like, all right, what do I need? I need a hoppage. Yep, this is my age of recording, okay? This is pre the new age tech stuff. So I got like the hoppage PVR. That thing was ancient history now. And a gaming laptop. And that's how I started my transcend, my growth into kind of gaming and recording and live streaming and stuff.
So you kind of saw other people getting it, doing that, and you're like, oh, I could do that too.
I saw a featured person, and that's when I was like, dude, I want to get in this video. Like, I know I could do this.
Interesting. And then, what was that? Like, did you have like a moment where did you even hesitate at all? Was like, oh, I'm getting that device. Cause it was like, I think that was like $100-$150 device at the time too. So it was like, yeah, that was the first device that I had started recording with as well. And it was like, you had to use like the old school triple wires and everything. Yeah. And it's like, it was a lot to do that. And you couldn't really do it real time or anything as well. There was a delay with it.
I guess it's kind of funny because like, remember the PlayStation Vita, like the old little, it was handheld, the first, like PlayStation's first handheld device. On that thing, there used to be like the ways that you can like crack into the firmware and get the games for free and stuff. So I was already kind of into the complicated, I'll follow this YouTube tutorial and I can figure it out. And that's how I came across a recording device. Like, wait, what? I can get my console gameplay and record it. Oh, if I get a computer, I can get better quality. All right. So like, yeah, the YouTube tutorials and stuff. Yeah, I'm ambitious. I just figured, man, I could do this. Like, let me just try it.
Wow. That's awesome. So you're in school and also starting to upload some content.
Yep.
What made you choose, like, where did you first start to post content on? And was that YouTube then?
No. So I was inspired by YouTube, but my first place I started uploading content was Twitch. And the reason for it was you could archive videos. So I was like, oh, not only is it like just happening, it's going to save it all. It's not going to take my memory from my PC. It was all in the cloud. And that to me was very appealing at the time. Outside of the interactive live feature, I really didn't even have a grip of what was the live streaming culture. There wasn't one back then. It was just like being built up.
Sure. And I mean, when you started it, was it like, was there any consideration of like content strategy more or less, or was it just, I'm going to do some stuff on Battlefield or would like try to get my stuff up places?
It was straight up pure instinct. I was just like, I can capture. This is hilarious. Like, boop, get in there, start talking smack to this guy, having fun in this game, jump in DayZ. Then all of a sudden I was like, you know, just if I wanted to play a game, I'll turn on every now and then. And I will get a few kind of player interactions with other people. And I was like, oh, this is cool. So like they're going from the game chat into my Twitch chat. Like, what? Like, this is kind of cool. It wasn't until Clash of Clans, I was addicted to mobile games. And I would always find myself checking, playing. And I'm like, dude, I don't even want to play this game right here. I want to play this game on here. How do I do that? And that was where things amplified and I realized, oh snap, I think I'm getting famous now because there's like a lot of people in my chat and a lot of people now sending me messages. I got my first donation and yeah, it gets kind of crazy from there.
Yeah. Okay. So it was really your shift over to mobile, because that's what I saw. Like the earliest videos on your YouTube channel seemed to be a lot of mobile content as well. But is that what you were streaming? Like, did you focus on, I mean, you say you're streaming on Twitch or using that more so, but like, is that where you started to see some pickup was from you streaming the mobile games?
Yeah, my first games I streamed were PC games. Where my channel started to hit that growth spurt was through mobile gaming. I helped pioneer on Twitch mobile gaming as, in the space. Just, you know, when I was streaming to games like Clash of Clans, there wasn't even a game category. It wasn't even a photo. One of the biggest games, oddly, in the world on cell phone from Supercell. Didn't even have a game category on Twitch, and I helped set that up and find, you know, the space for mobile gaming on Twitch and build that. And that's where like I started getting relationships with people at Twitch, and we fostered and built a community from nothing. I don't even know how people found me on Twitch because it was non-existent, I swear. And in my first year, I went from, so I started in 2012. By the time 2013 kicked in, I was already like growing and amassing these followers. And I took my first stab at partnership. I was denied. They told me what I needed to fix on. I fixed on the things that I needed to hit. And back then it was harder. So Twitch now, you need 90 minimal average viewers. Back then you needed 500 concurrent. So I was pulling massive concurrence for what it was worth for the time. And yeah, I was considered like just a growing streamer, like a big time streamer at that time, during that time, doing something no one else was doing.
Wow. And so, I mean, you're still in school while you're streaming and doing all of this as well then?
Yeah, I was allocating. So I had a part-time job. I was going to school full-time and I was streaming basically part-time at that time. And that was one of the things that Twitch was like, hey, listen, you have the numbers, but like you're streaming like 2-3 hour sessions. Like you need to do like 4 hours minimal a session, like 4 to 5 times a week. And I was just looking at it. I was thinking about it. I was like, all right, so I guess I got to grind harder. If that's all I'm missing, like I can do that. Let's get this partnership. So yeah, I would go to school. Like I would take like a 7 to 9 a.m. course and then get out and then go to like a part-time job. I was a recess teacher and then I was a receptionist at that same school. But yeah, I would work like anywhere from, let's say, 11 a.m., the time it takes to catch the train to work. And then I'll work from there till 4 p.m. like when the kids are out of school, or 4:30, sometimes actually curricular stuff, and then go home and stream, like literally. So I was just, you know, workload on top of workload, but condensing all my time into doing something that was pushing me in a positive direction.
Wow. And then as you started to kind of build up this, you know, you said you're starting to figure out your way, you started to get, you know, some more people following on Twitch. Is that when did you start to upload some YouTube content alongside of that? I mean, did you start to develop more of a strategy, or was it just really, my strategy is just to put more hours into streaming and that's where I need to focus?
Yeah. My biggest regrets back then was not understanding the potential that I had on YouTube. I took for granted my situation, my high, crazy high viewer counts, I throw a video up and it like break 10,000 views. Like, I didn't even care. Like, what is that? Like, whatever. Right. I didn't understand the influence that I had right in front of me. And if I would have known what I know now back then, I mean, I'd be like in a completely like 10X, right? I'd be like a PewDiePie type of person, like because of the growth and the potential the game had back then. So for me, where the gear started switching was when I was trying to work with Supercell and they were denying me access to the game and like privilege to, you know, behind the scenes stuff. And I couldn't figure out why. The reason was, one, I was very vulgar. I didn't understand branding and like, oh man, maybe I got to dial it down. I got to be a little more professional. It makes sense. Mm. You don't want to work with me. I'm out here. I'm bugging out. I'm having fun. I'm really careless, right? I was younger. And then my peers that were having this YouTube success, 100,000 subs, million subs, they're getting all this access. And you, Supercell then was favoriting people that had YouTube success. Why? Mm. Because, well, what is live streaming? We're talking a different era before live streaming was valued. And then that's when I realized, wow, I'm missing a key ingredient. I need to be more brand safe, right? I need to be brand appealing and I need more resource. Like I need more platform, more foundation. Like what am I standing on? I'm just standing on a live stream pillar. This is not enough. Let's start branching out. And then I started YouTubing, you know, taking Twitter a little more seriously and building my brand in a lot of different directions, taking all my marbles and putting them in different baskets at that point.
Do you know when you started to start build up more of the YouTube and kind of take that transition? Was like a few years into it?
2 years in.
2 years in.
And my first year, I was growing, hit partnership. I was getting these crazy numbers. By my second year, I'm like, I could be doing more. Like, why am I not on the main stage? Like, kicking it with like Supercell or like figuring out like a part of these events. Like I'm as big as that guy. Sure. But like where's the disconnect? I found what was the disconnect. It was just my brand wasn't like quite there yet. I realized what I was missing, started working on that. But my third and fourth year, something else clicked where I'm like live streaming revenue shouldn't be my A revenue. This should be my C revenue. Mm. Like I should be doing things bigger than that. And I'm on my sixth, seventh year now. And I literally run my own business and I'm like an entire different kind of demon in this space. Like I'm playing at a different game now. But it's because of the years I pick up, I learn, yeah, and I try to improve myself.
I love that so much. And so as you're developing, kind of going through this through the years, I noticed too, like you uploaded a variety of different games, it seemed like as well. I don't know if were you streaming a bunch of different games as well? Like how was that transition for you as you continued over the years? Cause it doesn't look like you're playing Clash of Clans anymore now.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I kind of joke around with this on stream every now and then. I'll say, hey, is it just lucky that I got popular or is it skill or like, do I know something if sure. I'm able to do this game after game after game? Like, mm-hmm. How do you find success game after game? What is it? Is it the person? What's the special ingredient? I always ask myself that. Was it luck? Is luck involved? Is it hard work? Is it, you know, like skill in the game? I think it's a combination of everything. Over the years, I've found out how to make yourself relevant. Sometimes you just got to make yourself relevant. You got to do what you got to do and you got to work hard for it. And I played on my niche. I played on my strengths. And that is what allows me to be successful in different game categories. And I make sure I'm passionate about the game. So yeah, I played Clash of Clans as my first kind of blow up game title. Did DayZ. And this is where I got into the PC gaming, Counter-Strike, right? That kind of stuff. H1Z1. Really fun games, really addictive games. I got into Rust, right? So I was always flexible. Then I did Clash Royale. So Supercell released a new title. Mm-hmm. This is where I was like, okay, here's my chance. YouTube, I'm going to be early. I'm going to do it. And I was doing it. I got like to like 25,000 subs on YouTube. I'm like, all right, this is hard. I'm not seeing all the numbers I'm looking for, but I mean, I'm growing. So that's cool, right? And then I got addicted to another game, Kingdom Hearts. It was like another mobile gacha. And I found my niche in that category was because I was spending a lot of money in the game and people really wanted to consume that because, you know, they live vicariously through us, through the mobile kind of games. But it's an investment. It's sure. Write off and you make it back in some kind of revenue, yada, yada. It's a lot of fun. So it's like a win-win. It's like you're getting paid to do crazy stuff. Got to appreciate that. So that was helping me grow my YouTube channel. And I was all in. Like I loved it. But then the game dev started going downhill. And it wasn't fun anymore. And they took away the strategy that I fell in love with the game to start. Mm. At that kind of transition, Fortnite was coming around. And I found something special in Fortnite because the building aspect, and I was really into Rust. And what I was infatuated about Rust was build a base, sit in it, and fend off these crazies who try to attack you.
Right.
And take your stuff. So Fortnite had that element, except it was way more fast paced.
That's like Clash of Clans too, right?
Yeah. It was real time. Yeah. And then the thing about Fortnite that released the Clash of Clans, it's real time strategy. So your actions per minute are crazy high. So in Clash of Clans, the addiction comes from the high action per minute in a small window of time. And then you don't get to do it again until time passes. It's like Fortnite's the same thing. Like you just get in and then you're just like, button mash, button mash, button mash. Success. Oh my gosh. Chill. Heal. Back.
Yeah.
Okay. And then it happens again. Boom. Button mash, button mash. So high APM, I realized I do really good in games with high APM because like that adrenaline, you feed that. And I just saw it in the game and I'm like, this game's going to be crazy. Like, and even if it's not, I'm addicted to it. I could build a small cult following, like whatever, like this is what I'm going to do. And it turned out to be way bigger than like life itself. So,
and when you started into Fortnite, did you get into the PvE aspect of that at all? Or was it when it switched to PvP and all of that started happening?
When it switched to PvP, because mm-hmm. I was already into the battle royales. So I was building my game sense on like, you know, how to survive and all that kind of stuff. I'm always been like, you know, the tactical kind of strategy. I get a kick out of like, oh, look, this guy doesn't know I'm behind this mountain, but I have high ground, my advantage. Like, you know what I mean? Like textbook.
Yeah.
Ways to victory.
Strategy
games.
That was the first time that I remembered seeing your content was you were doing all of these breakdowns of Fortnite. It was like building strategy. It was a bunch of different stuff. And I was trying to get better at the game myself. So I was looking for creators on it. And I started watching some of your stuff on that. But was that the first place you kind of started with it? Was it more of a focus on the YouTube side or were you really trying to stream more of it? How was your approach as you kind of got into Fortnite?
By that point, I was already a full-time content creator. So like, gotcha. When I pushed away from mobile, I found out how to like deal sponsor deals. And I was like doing a lot of front page Twitch and like, you know, getting paid to promote games and stuff. So
sure.
Like as far as income and stuff goes, I was already well established, like just as a full-time creator. And my live stream, like I have a really strong community from doing it so many years over Twitch.
Yeah.
So like when Fortnite came around, I just wanted to make sure that I was still building that YouTube because I always wanted like a YouTube I could be proud of and look back at and be like, yes, that's me. Mm-hmm. I realized that passive revenue kind of on YouTube was smart. Like my content's there. Mm-hmm. If I meet someone in person, I can't be like, yeah, go to my live stream. Like what's on live stream? It's not live, right? So I'm like, go to my YouTube channel. Here's the content. Go check it out. You can see my best work. So my first YouTube video, even in Clash of Clans, was a tutorial video. I was like, let me teach you how to use these balloon strats. I'm nice with this, right? Like that's how sure. I felt. And then in Clash Royale, I was like, let me teach you how to run this deck because, bro, I'm nice with this one. And then in like PUBG, I was like, yo, let me show you how to run behind this mountain because this strategy is kind of fun to do. And in Kingdom Hearts, I was like, let me show you how to beat this boss. This is a good strategy. This is how you're going to do it. Fortnite came around. I was like, let me teach you how to snipe. You guys might not know Battlefield bullet drop, but this is already natural for me. So here, this is how bullet drop works. And I just kept tutorials. It's just my niche, right? Like news, updates, love breaking it down, love reading into it. And then tutorials, like, let me teach you how to do this. Even now today, I still do high quality tutorials around pro players. And I build my YouTube channel off of my strengths and news channel. That all somehow transitioned to commentating professionally, which we haven't even got to yet, but yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was my next question for you is then how did you get into casting as well? Because I mean, talk about some of the stuff that you've even casted. There's so much stuff now, right?
Yeah. When it comes down to Fortnite, I'm definitely one of the premier voices from the World Cup to the Pro-Am to every single major event in the history of the short years that Fortnite's been around. I've been blessed to be a part of that foundation. A big part of it is definitely due to Epic. Epic decided to believe in endemic people, endemic talent in the game. And they turned me from a content creator who knew what I was doing into a commentator who knows how to commentate professionally on a large scale event at the highest, you know, risk factors, because I look at it as like, this is high stakes streaming. When you're commentating an event, you only get one shot to spit that line. You only get one shot to make that player look good when the show closes. And you only get one time to say, welcome to the world finale of Fortnite, right? Like you only get one time. It's really high stakes, a lot of pressure, but I live in that pressure, man. I thrive in it. They've helped me develop those skills.
Yeah.
The way I got there It's so, so ironic. In mobile gaming, I had a weird just lunch with some guy who had a game for a company called Spy Games. Little did I know this company is a branch down from Epic, right? Years ago. He's like, hey, let me show you my beta. It's in mobile. And I'm like, another beta mobile that's probably going to be trash. Like, but you know what? Being who I am, I'm not going to turn down an opportunity. I remember when I was hungry for these kind of reach outs, and I'm always very humbled to the fact that, man, this guy wants to sit with me. He wants to buy me lunch. I'm going to have lunch with this guy at TwitchCon. This is years ago. I have lunch. His name is Bradley. Awesome dude. We sit there. We talk about the game. It was all right. It was cool. Never amounts to anything. Fortnite comes around. Bradley hits me up. It's like, hey, remember me from Chair Games? I noticed you posted about Fortnite. That's actually Epic. We work for Epic. We're owned by Epic. And I was like, shut up. He was like, let me introduce you to someone that I know. Are you going to be at TwitchCon? I'm like, yes, I am going to be at the next TwitchCon. Let's do it. He introduces me to KL. KL at the time was in charge of like the community. Fortnite was super small, little booth. Made friends with him. Met Myth when Myth had like, you know, 100 wins. I had like 70 wins. So we're both on the leaderboards back then as competitive players. And that's where the spark began of me knowing someone from just this weird connection years ago. I was going to go to that booth no matter what anyways, because sure. I loved Fortnite. But just through divine intervention and streamlining the process, that one meet that I had with that one guy that you never knew what he was capable of, who sure. he knew, introduced me to someone at Epic. That's where things kicked off. That's where my partnership with them began. That's where my communication began. I was like, dude, I love your guys' game. I know this is going to be awesome. Winter came around, PlayStation Experience happened, and they were like, we need 4 content creators. And then they're like, oh, that monster dude we met at TwitchCon, he was cool. Myth, oh yeah, remember that kid? He's grinding. Yeah, bro, you know what? They both play the game. They're cool. And then they're like, we need 2 big content creators. CDN the Third's loving this game. Get him in there. Dr. Lupo's killing us. Let's get him. So, and then, this is also kind of cool, we need casters. They invite Golden Boy. And that's when Zeke is like doing his first commentary. And I was hired for that to play and just have fun. And Golden Boy and Zeke were commentating over me. And there was a time there where it was so loose. It was so lax. Like Epic was just like, have fun. They were like, yo, who wants to jump on and commentate? Like, I need a break. Zeke needed a break. And I was like, yo, what's up? I'll sit down with Golden Boy. Like, this guy's a legend, dude. Like, yeah. Let's do it. And me and Golden Boy was just like commentating over some games. I'm like a nerd. Like, I'm like, oh, yo, you know why he's doing that right there? Look, he's going to take this mountain right here. Check it out. Right? I'm just nerding out, just doing my thing. I don't realize I'm soft equipped to like break things down yet. I didn't have my voice back then, my tone to commentate. But Golden Boy saw a little bit in me. And he says, yo, bro, like, you got some, what do you say? Potential. He's like, you got some potential, bro. I'm telling you. Like, you ever want to commentate some Fortnite? Like, let me know. Because Golden Boy knows his strength is he could do any game. He's a pilot. He's a show host. All he needs is some nerd that knows the game to like do the you know, the hard part. And he'll just be like, yes, that was crazy, right? Like, he'll feed off of that. So he basically just soft invited me like right there. Like, hey, listen, you want to do some Fortnite? Like, you know your stuff, bro. Let's do it. And that's how we did it. Our first real event together. And from there, I was like, oh, I'm miles behind when it comes down to real commentary. Like, if I had to open this show right now, I'm really not ready. I was like, I got to learn a little more. I got to prepare.
And how did you kind of build that up? Because, I mean, to go from just hopping in on a stage at an opportunity, which I don't know how many people would even want to get in and actually commentate because you're put, like you said, like it's high stakes when you're actually commentating it. And you're like trying to help, you know, explain everything that's going on here. Like, was that you, like, how did you more proactively build that if you did, or was it just kind of just getting in and putting more reps in with it?
One, definitely reps. Reps are invaluable. Like, you can't put a price on reps. This is what Epic provided for us. We went through boot camps of like reps to get ready for World Cup. Imagine $30 million tournament. You'd hope they prepare the casters.
Yeah.
Which they did. But prior to that, it was reps. It was looking at what I was saying and trying to mirror the delivery because my delivery was weak. But one thing I didn't want to sound like, I don't want to sound like a Call of Duty caster with this like fake radio voice, and here he goes, and he's going around the corner. I dislike that tone so much. Sure. I want it to sound like, all right, he's coming up, man. Do you guys feel the tension right now? Mm. Like, sit with me right now. Sit in this moment with me. I want it to sound like me. I want it to sound intense, different, grungy. You know, keep my style in there without sounding like some radio fake host. Like, I don't like listening to that. I like listening to podcasts, people that are kicking it and that personality. And I wanted to bring that in a live stream setting. I think Golden Boy realized that I had that in me and he had that in him. And he was like, if you can do that, you're going to find more success and I can help you in a way. He's like a mentor in a sense, because a lot of my first big events were side by side with him, someone who is my anchor. He can carry this entire thing. If the ship goes down, he's got this, right? He's got the paddles. I'm at the point now I can carry an entire show now because sure. of the experience, but it was living in the shadow of those high stakes reps when it mattered and studying and practicing and then learning how to get better. Even now I'm growing a lot as a commentator.
And as you're, you know, working on the commentator front of everything, you're still keeping up the streams, the videos and everything. Like, how is your schedule shifted? I mean, you're doing this full time. What's your day to day as you're doing all of this in general?
Yeah, I got you. So right now, every weekend I'm slated to cast, like for the foreseeable few weeks, right? So I got all this commentary. I also edit my own YouTube videos. I have a full-time editor as well, but I hustle hard. Like, I use all my time into my craft for a lot of periods. I also run my own podcast. We have the number one Fortnite podcast. So I put time aside to record for our podcast, get guests.
And what's your podcast name?
The Fortnite Podcast. Yeah, there we play go. SEO hard. Like,
it's good.
So yeah, what, like a day, I wake up, I brush my teeth. I think about what it is that I have to do. Let's just, I'll take like an intense day, for example. Wake up. I got to edit that video footage from yesterday's stream because I made sure that I was creating content in advance for YouTube while live streaming. So that's a 2-for-1 special right there. While I'm doing that, I'm also gathering intel for my next cast because I'm training around the professional players, my knowledge of them. This is going to play into part tomorrow when I have to go cast this next big event. So edit the video, get it ready, upload it. Hit a live stream, finish a live stream, jump off, probably got the podcast recorded. Let me put a quick hour aside. Let's do this. Get that done. That's like what my day looks like. Answer my emails. I'm also running a full-time production agency around esports events. Why? Well, like I said, as I learn, I figure I need to fill the holes. What am I missing? I'd rather be in a position where, why wait for an event to come to me when I can throw an event, hire myself if I really felt like it. So I'm, you know, doing business for producing events for other, you know, companies to put their game on the main stage and deliver their projects. I do all this simultaneously in an order and I just get it done. Like after this podcast, I got an interview with Scale, who is a pro player, who I'm going to then inject into my tomorrow's video for his breakdown for YouTube, which I streamed yesterday. And then, you know what I mean? Thursday's rehearsal for the Fortnite event over the weekend. I'm going to bang that out. If I got to jump off, do something real quick, I'm going to get it done. But it's just about being proactive. And think about all the free time you have in the world. You have a lot of it. You just got to, you know, line it up. Make it all work together. Make it relate to one another. And then you can build faster. So,
and I'm curious,
get my time worth.
I think a lot of people, maybe they see this like, man, look how hard you're working at all this stuff. Like, it's... You know, this is a beautiful representation of like, look at all the work of everything that you're putting in and how it is so much more than, you know, what people will look at this and like, oh, you're playing some video games.
Yeah, no, not that.
You know what I mean? But like, and so I guess like, how do you maintain, I guess, your passion in that, your interest, like, you know, having a good time where you don't want to just, I'm just not going to do anything today and just watch some Netflix or something.
I keep my stress low by choosing only projects that I like. Mm. If I don't like your project, I don't care how much money you're offering. I'm probably just going to tell you no. So like, look at how fast you hit me up. It's like, you want to get on the podcast? Yes. Love podcast.
You were one of the fastest people to respond. Maybe like, let's do it, man.
You said what time? I was like, oh, I get to pick a time, even better. I was ready to do it like right there. I was like, I'm kind of not doing nothing too crazy. I can do it right now. I was like, oh, okay, Tuesday. I looked. I was like, all right, well, I got to cast Sunday. Monday, I knew I'm going to want to do content. I can do it Tuesday. Like, I'll wake up Tuesday. I'm chilling. So like, that's me. Like, and opportunity, I don't really want to turn down anyone who's working hard. And if opportunity comes my way, like I said, I still feel that, like, damn, that's cool, bro. Stone Mountain. Like, I know you too from, you know, just the years you've been around. So, you know, naturally I come across your tweets or your messages. I think you did some work with Fnatic in the past.
Yeah.
I did some work with Fnatic as a caster for one of their events. So like, there's, we already have crossed many times,
sure,
whether you kind of realize it or not, but like, I'm cognizant of those things. So like, I see that. I was like, oh, it's not, yeah, Stone Mountain, dude, I remember Fnatic. I wonder if that's how he found me. But no, it turns out you just saw like a YouTube video. So
yeah,
either way, we're on each other's radar, whether you know it or not.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But, no, yeah, I've been loving everything that you've been doing. It's been really cool to see all of it. But I guess like before you got even doing it full time, like, you know, what was that transition for you even to going full time? And were you putting all of that effort in, I guess, you were part time on it?
Yeah, this is how it happened on Twitch. You know how like the subscription based model goes for most of these live streams. You get to see how many, you know, active numbers you had back then. This is when like I had my first partnership agreement. It was, you know, 50-50 split, my original one. And then, it was like, all right, I make 250. I need a lot of subs to make up the money from like work. But eventually I hit a point to where on my stream, I had like 250, almost 300 odd unique subscribers. So I was building like a nice little side check for playing video games, not including the donations from like the mobile gaming community, especially. I have a lot of buying power. These guys are into the game like I am. Like, we're dropping money to do small transactions. They loved me. They loved supporting me and what I was doing. So like, I was making pretty good money, especially for some broke kid in the Bronx and my part-time job. Like, I was chilling for what it was worth for me back then. I looked at my job and I was like, well, if I'm putting 4 hours into this and like 5 hours or 7 hours into my part-time, what happens if I just double my input on streaming, which is way more fun, way more cool, and I'm making like good money? My money should go up by 2x2, right? Sort of, right? Like, sort of. I knew I was going to see a bump. That was my investment. That was my gamble. That was my risk. My dad was like, dude, I got you this job. Are you crazy? What do you mean you want to quit? And I'm like, they don't give me. And I swear to God, I demanded a full raise. Like, I was like, listen, I know y'all like me. I work hard up in here. I was receptionist at the time. I went from recess aide to receptionist. So I had my desk and all that. Like, you know what I mean? I had to wear my cardigan into work. And I was in a school work setting. I'm like, hey, listen, like this little, like, you know, let's say 15K, whatever I was making part-time. I said, we got to like double that or like triple it. Because seriously, if I don't get like some full-time salary, like Miss Jackie back here is making 50,000 a year. Just because I'm 21 or whatever I was, it's like, doesn't mean I don't deserve to make as much money as her, because I'm working as hard as her. And Steve over here, who does payroll, is giving me all the stubs to do for him. So I'm also doing his job. Like, literally, I swear, I'm not kidding. I was so blunt. I was like, I'm doing so much more than what this job entitles or entails. And it's not fair. I want some serious money or I'm out. And they were like, later, we'll find someone else. And I was like, all right, peace. And I just went to go be a full-time live streamer and go to school.
That's awesome. And I mean, did you finish through school? Is that something you're like, all right?
Yeah, I committed. I made sure I got my community, my associate's degree from the community college I was in. And then from there, I put it on the back burner and I went, like, then I was able to go full time. So let me just focus on streaming for a little bit. I know I can always take my policing test and get into the workforce, law enforcement, if I really like had to and needed to. And even like my whole like committing to college thing was just a test, because I was like, if I can't do well in college, I'm going to military or something. So like, even now with like charity and stuff like that, I support military funds and, you know, just Marines type stuff, because that was my backup. I was really, really committed to finding success in some way. My own definition of what success is was to get out of the Bronx. Like, seriously, like, just do what I got to do to maintain some kind of stable income and stuff like that. So, college worked out. So,
yeah, and man, I'm incredibly impressed with where you're at. I'm super excited to see where everything else continues to go for you. I guess if you had any parting advice for somebody that's, you know, trying to figure all this stuff out for themselves or anything. And maybe there's some advice that you give out to your stream when you're talking in general for other content creators or streamers.
Yeah, no, I have like a wealth of knowledge and advice, but I think the biggest one is don't get over the numbers. Forget the numbers. Those don't mean anything. They don't equal quality. They don't define you as a person. And another one is just like define success for yourself and achieve that. I find myself to be extremely successful and I'm nowhere near what other people would say is the top, right? But I'm still in the NFL of streaming and I'm still doing pretty good for myself. You don't have to be number one to be doing good for yourself. Just define success for yourself, achieve that, and I think you'll be all right.
I love that, man. And if anybody wants to check you out, where's the best place that they can go?
Yeah, yo, I spit all these facts everywhere, man. At Monster D-Face, guys, you guys enjoyed the podcast. Drop support, man. Drop support. I'm here.
Go check him out. I mean, I love it, man. I love the content. Love what you're doing. And thank you again so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. Thank you.
If you guys want to listen to any more like this as well, you can find more at pipeline.gg as well. Absolute pleasure, man. Thank you so much.